What's up, Beardos? You're listening to a very special, exceptionally good, marvelously decent, stupendously satisfactory, awesomely average, perfectly prehistoric bonus episode of The Bearded Vegans.
Basically, our whole philosophy boils down to don't be a jerk.
Don't really answer the question first by not answering the question. I really hope people didn't tune in to hear us talk about beer.
Welcome to the show. I'm Paul.
And I'm Andy.
And we are The Bearded Vegans, a podcast featuring a dissection of all things vegan.
You already know you can find all of our previous episodes at thebeardvegans.com, and you can reach us by emailing thebeardvegans@gmail.com or just leave a comment below.
In today's Patreon-exclusive episode, we're going to talk about what we've been eating and then analyze the animal rights themes in Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom.
Paul, you know, I thought that we were being all funny and clever with this growing introduction that we've been doing, but I have to say, I think it's grown to T-Rex proportions, and we have to cut it down.
Yes, no, I agree. I think I would not mind. We added a little thematic one to the end there. I wouldn't mind just doing a themed one every single time. I feel like we're real into themes in this show. Like, the outro has a theme. The outro music has to do with the theme. Why not more?
And in this episode, we're analyzing themes.
Exactly. All about those themes.
Yeah. So, Paul, you know, before we really get into anything that we have planned, I think that we need to give a huge thank you to all of the amazing Beardos out there that are supporting us. If you are listening to this episode, that means you're throwing at least $1 a month our way, and we are eternally grateful for that support. Paul, we actually reached a milestone recently, and that is that we hit over 100 patrons. We're at 103 right now. So, I don't know, that's pretty exciting to me. We are so close to reaching our second goal, which means we'll get 2 episodes transcribed per month once we hit that. So, yeah, it's been exciting seeing how many people are sort of joining us for this journey.
Yeah, thank you to everyone that's subscribed so far. And I sincerely hope that you enjoy these bonus episodes that we've been putting out.
Yeah, definitely. And as always, let us know, you know, I think we have like a little more wiggle room with these bonus episodes in terms of what kind of things we can do and like break from the format a little bit or cover different topics. And obviously we love doing the movie reviews, but feel free to suggest things for us because, hey, maybe we'll even do more than one in a month. You know, we're definitely going to throw in an additional bonus episode in the month whenever we hit our next goal. But yeah, let us know what you want. This is your episode as much as it is ours. So, send us a message, leave a comment, whatever you got to do. Let us know what you want to hear.
Cool. All right, Andy. So I have an interestingly related food experience related to what we're going to be talking about later. But I want to hear what you've been eating first.
Well, you know, I recently passed through the town of Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, one of my favorite towns. And when I do that, I like to stop at Vegan Treats. Obviously, that's kind of a default stop. But I did make a quick detour to Allentown, which is the town next door, to go to Cali Burrito, which is a place that I don't think I've talked about on the show before. Have you ever been there?
Never even heard of it.
It's a burrito and taco place, but they have an extensive vegetarian menu, and they can, you know, make things vegan just by leaving off the sour cream and the cheese. And my default that I get there is called the Humboldt, and it comes with this smoked tofu that is the most delicious. It's among my favorite tofu that I've ever had. Yeah,
that
you would love
good.
It. I know it's not raw, but I still think that it would please one Paul Steller.
That sounds really good.
And they always have these special burrito of the week kind of things, and they're never vegan. But the one that I saw as I walked in this time was a fried buffalo tofu was like the center of it. But then it also came with some blue cheese dressing and like other things that would, if they were left off, it probably wouldn't be all that great. But
yeah,
I don't know. Just big shout out to Cali Burrito. It's always consistent, and I'm such a fan of that place, and it's nice that it's always there when I'm heading either east or west through the very long drive in Pennsylvania.
I'm going to be in Bethlehem in a couple weeks, so maybe I'll have to stop there.
Yeah, do it up. So, Paul, I know that you went to one of my favorite places in the world, at least a franchise of a chain that's my favorite movie theater chain in the world. And it was your first time, so tell me all about it.
So it's ironic, Andy, because if you listen to, at this point, what was the last episode we recorded, episode the mailbag episode 140, like, you'll know that I went to Colorado recently, and we actually released a whole bonus episode about the food in Colorado that I ate. And I unintentionally but conveniently left out one place that I went to and got vegan food, and that is the Alamo Drafthouse Cinema. And that's where I saw Jurassic World. And like Andy said, I had never been here before. And if you're not familiar, you basically, you have your own little table while you're watching the movie, and you can, there's a full menu there, and you can order food during the movie, and waiters will come by and they'll pick up a little note card, whatever you want, that you write down. And it's great. I'd never been there before. It was an absolutely amazing experience. Also, you can, if someone's talking or texting, you can write down that someone is being naughty, and they will go in. And if that person commits the foul more than once, they will eject the person from the movie theater, which is pretty
great.
With
no refund.
Now, Andy, did you see Jurassic World at an Alamo Drafthouse?
I did not. Did they have special menu items for it?
I got a couple of things to say. So they did have special menu items. Like, the whole menu was like dinosaur puns. I don't think any of the, there was like a separate kind of vegan insert. I don't think any of the vegan ones had puns, but they had some pretty good puns for the, like, the regular menu. However, I will say this, Andy, and everyone, whether or not you have seen Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom or not, you need to go on YouTube and look up, just type in Jeff Goldblum Alamo House. And they had, you know how, Andy, typically at a movie theater, there'll be some little fun animation that's like, don't talk in text during the movie, it disturbs your neighbors, and something like that. They had a whole Jeff Goldblum intro thing about not talking and texting during the movie. And it was so enjoyable and so funny. And it's all on YouTube. So I would definitely check that out.
That's
but
awesome.
actually getting to the food. So I ordered entirely too much food, which is fine. But I got these buffalo cauliflower wings, and they were great. They came with this like ranch dressing. I know I had previously talked about some other cauliflower wings that I had gotten in Colorado. And I will say, these ones at the Draft House weren't as crispy as the ones that I got at Watercourse Foods, but they were still delicious. And the ranch, their little ranch dip was great too. And
Paul,
then, yes, Andy?
You have to get cauliflower wings when you're in Colorado.
Never made that connection, but you're absolutely right. And then the other thing I got, of course, was the Beyond Burger. Came with a side of fries. I don't know if I've ever had the Beyond Burger and I didn't like it. I think we talked about this. Oh, it was in the mailbag episode because someone asked which one we preferred, and we said that the Beyond Burger was consistent. And I have to agree. I really enjoyed it. And it was just so, it was made so much more enjoyable that I was like, being served it, because I don't think I've ever ordered it at a place, but then also I was just watching a movie on a big movie theater screen while I was eating this Beyond Burger. So it was overall incredibly enjoyable experience, both food wise and movie wise.
How many items would you say were on the separate vegan menu?
I would say like 8.
Okay. Paul, that's been something that's been really grinding my gears, is that the various Draft House locations have different levels of vegan options. And the one in Austin was one of the first ones to introduce the separate vegan menu. And it did have the cauliflower on it and a couple of other things. And actually this really good avocado toast. But then I may have complained about this on the show before, but the Brooklyn location, Brooklyn, home of so many amazing vegan places and vegan options, had almost no vegan options on the menu aside from like French fries or popcorn without butter or this like quinoa bowl. And every time I went there, you know, they send you an email where you can provide feedback. And I was always like, please add vegan options. It would be so easy to get some Follow Your Heart shreds to make the pizzas vegan, or a vegan burger to make the burgers vegan, and some vegan ice cream to make milk. Like, it would just be so easy to do that. And I'm shocked that you're not doing that in Brooklyn. And I just checked online, and they have added a separate vegan menu for Brooklyn.
Yeah.
but it only has four items on it. But one of which is the Beyond Burger with like caramelized onions and ranch and all that, and then the buffalo cauliflower, and then two different quinoa bowls. So it's a step up, because when I go before, I would just get French fries, which is fine. I love French fries, but they also never give you enough ketchup. I had to learn to write extra, extra, extra ketchup to get the amount of ketchup that I needed for my French fries.
That's so funny. Do you think they were just like, This guy keeps writing into us like, just give him a couple more vegan options.
They're like waiting for me to go there, and I'm gonna order it, and they're gonna be like, yes, confetti falls from the ceiling.
They come by and like slam the Beyond Burger on your table, like, here it is.
Paul, I'm gonna be really bummed out if I go see the new Mission Impossible there and they don't have the Impossible Burger on the menu.
Ooh,
for it.
That'd be an expensive endeavor. Although it really doesn't seem like, I mean, it seems like the Alamo Drafthouse spares no expense when it comes to like all the pre-show like things that they show, and it seems like all this stuff is specifically tailored for the movie that you're seeing. Obviously, it's probably only for big blockbusters, but I know, for instance, they had an advertisement that they were showing Jaws, and everyone that went got like a free little visor that had like a shark fin hat on it, or something silly like that. But yeah, they really pull out all the stops.
They do a lot of stuff like that. They have a tailored pre-show for pretty much any movie I've ever seen there, big or small.
Whoa.
Which is pretty awesome. And yeah, they do those showings where they give people extra stuff. I don't know if you've ever seen... Have you seen the movie They Live, Paul?
I have not.
Well, there's the famous line in that is, I've come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass, and I'm all out of bubblegum.
Yeah.
And there's these sunglasses that the main character wears that reveals if someone is this like alien race or not. And so they did a screening of that, and they gave everyone bubblegum and sunglasses when they went in. They have done screenings of Terminator where they actually have pyrotechnics happen in the theater.
Jesus.
They do all this cool stuff. They do Terror Tuesdays at a lot of the locations where it's a $5 horror movie, and usually it's like an original 35mm print, and they just do so much good stuff. It's really tailored to the movie fan. But as you mentioned, the absolute best part of it, I could take or leave any of the food or all the extravagant extras, but the fact that they have a very strict no talking, no texting policy, and then make it so easy to snitch on your neighbor. It's like the one instance in which snitching is totally okay. I have never had to do it. I have friends that have had to do it, and I feel like I would get so much pleasure out of writing that down and be like, seat 3A won't shut up, and seeing them get kicked out. I saw a movie last night, and I had to tell the only other two people in the theater to shut the hell up. I said it nicer than that. I said, hey, could you guys please stop talking? And the guy said, oh, sorry. And I said, thank you. And then they didn't talk.
Nice.
So it's always a relief when that doesn't result in them kicking my ass. So,
and how many times has that happened, Andy?
Zero times, but I'm always afraid because normally if I say that, people stop for like 10 minutes and then they slowly continue to raise their volume up as if they're like easing back into it and I'm not going to notice.
Especially if it's like just you and then the other people in the movie theater, if they started kicking your butt, no one else would be there.
And they could also be like, there's more of us than you here. So obviously our enjoyment, like utilitarian wise, our enjoyment of this film matters more than your enjoyment of this film. Also, the theater I saw last night had, like, you know, dim lights on the sides of the walls kind of thing for some mood lighting. And one of them was about to die, and it was just flickering for the whole movie. It was horrible.
That's terrible.
But the Incredibles 2, a delightful film. All right, Paul.
Yes.
So we are going to talk about Jurassic World, and I think we'll probably do... Let's do a little bit of a review, and so for anyone that hasn't seen it, we'll do a little spoiler-free section, and then we'll have a notification when we're going to start talking about spoilers, and we're going to like really dive into it and really dig into the various animal rights themes. But before we do that, Paul, I'm curious what your attachment to, involvement, any sort of wistful thinking you have about the original Jurassic Park and the Jurassic Park franchise as a whole, like, what's your opinion of this franchise?
I'm definitely not a super fan. I'll say that. I'm not someone that's like obsessed with these movies. I love the original Jurassic Park. I'm sure that I've seen some of the other ones in the franchise, but none of them come to mind So I don't even know if I've seen any of the other ones besides, fast forward 15 years, Jurassic World, the first Jurassic World. I saw that whenever it came out 2 or 3 years ago, whatever, and thought it was really just okay. I thought it was nowhere near how good the original Jurassic Park was. I was like, yeah, whatever, this movie's okay. So that's how I feel about the franchise as a whole. What are your opinions?
I think the original Jurassic Park is one of the best films of all time. I saw it in the theater as a young boy with my mom and my sister on opening weekend, and it was so packed that we couldn't even sit together. So me and my sister were together, my mom had to sit behind us. And I remember just being terrified by the experience.
Huh.
And I've seen it several times since. I went and saw it when they did the 3D reissue 10 years ago or whatever that was. And it still holds up on almost every level except for some of the computer animation. But it was also at a time when they weren't relying on that for the entire dinosaur experience. So they still used a lot of practical effects and puppets and whatnot for the dinosaurs. So it's still used incredibly well.
Mm-hmm.
I think the pacing of that film is flawless. I think that the ratcheting up of the tension, all of the set pieces, all of the action beats, and then like the moments of comedy, I think it's masterful filmmaking, and I honestly cannot say enough good things about that film. Obviously, the score is incredible, the cast is incredible, and then the other ones came along. The Lost World, you know, number two, I thought it was fine. It had some great moments. Obviously, it had more Jeff Goldblum in it, which is always a good thing. Had some really nice action moments, but it just couldn't capture the majesty and the magic of the original one. And I think that in the original, when we first saw those dinosaurs, it was this awe-inspiring moment because we had never really seen dinosaurs like that in film before.
Yeah.
And now we had seen them already. So you never quite capture that feeling again.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. And then the third one was fine. It's not great by any stretch, but it's whatever. It gets the job done. It's okay. It's like a C-plus action film. As far as Jurassic World goes, yeah, I'm with you. I had fun with it, but I thought it was fine. There were some really cool moments in it. I loved the moment when Indominus Rex gets out of the pen in that one. I thought that was a really tense moment. That was the closest anything got to the tense moments in the original one. But the original, you know, like the Dilophosaurus who spits the acid at Nedry in the original.
Yeah.
That's such a terrifying sequence. And there's nothing really like that in Jurassic World, but it was fine. I thought Jurassic World was kind of mean-spirited at times, especially the way that they killed that. It was the assistant.
Yeah, the assistant,
right? Like, it was just so mean-spirited. And I don't know, there's things about it that didn't sit right with me, but there were still some cool sequences. But I didn't have the highest of hopes for Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom because of that. So I feel like maybe we both went into it with the same kind of expectations.
Yeah.
So I guess with that said, let's get into our review of Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom.
She's dragged. Okay, come on.
Okay. Are you okay?
I'm okay.
How many can you save?
11 species. Blue is the last of her kind.
You'll never capture her.
We thought you might know someone who could help.
A rescue op? What could go wrong?
Hey, Blue. You know me.
Come with me. You know you can't stay here.
Back your men up right now.
It was all a lie!
The man who proved raptors can follow orders.
You never thought how many millions a trained predator might be worth?
They're gonna sell them.
Not Blue. They need it for something else.
What is that thing?
They made it.
This is the most dangerous creature that ever walked the earth.
I say we shut this whole thing down.
All right, so that was from the trailer of Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, and this will be the spoiler-free section, but the plot synopsis from IMDb is, when the island's dormant volcano begins roaring to life, Owen and Claire mount a campaign to rescue the remaining dinosaurs from this extinction-level event. And this was directed by J.A. Bayona and stars the usuals Chris Pratt, Bryce Dallas Howard, Vegan, James Cromwell, Toby Jones, Ted Levine, and of course our boy Jeff Goldblum, a.k.a. Dr. Greger in Paul's mind. So, all right, so Paul, so you went in with middling expectations, it seems.
Yes.
What was your overall impression of this film?
I had, maybe it was because I went in with such low expectations, but I had a lot of fun with this movie. I thought the movie was fun. I didn't take anything like, it didn't, as you said, it wasn't like awe-inspiring like the original Jurassic Park movie. And I don't think it was as good of a movie as the original Jurassic Park movie, but I had fun with it, Andy. What about you?
I thought this film was a horrible mess. I won't say that there wasn't a few vaguely thrilling action scenes, but the whole thing just felt like a rushed mess. When I, you know, when I mentioned the pacing of the original one being so masterful, this one, it felt like there should have been something more before they got to the island. And everything just felt really rushed. It felt like the characters were barely characters. They're barely even caricatures of a character. I didn't really understand a lot of people's motivations. Like, people did things just because that's what the movie needed them to do, not because they instilled any sort of earnest motivation within them.
Yeah.
And it just felt really clumsy. And things that were given so much gravity in the original film are just these, like, toss away ideas in this one. And like, for instance, in the original Jurassic Park, the opening scene is them just trying to get a raptor from like the transport truck into the raptor paddock. And it requires this whole team of people, and someone dies, and it's this like really terrifying thing. And in this one, they're like wrangling dinosaurs. It's just like two guys with a rope and like a little bit of like a burlap sack over their mouth. And it just, the dinosaurs for the most part don't feel terrifying at all. And maybe that's by design, because I think this is the first one that sort of asks you to look at the dinosaurs as if they're good guys in some way, or to at least really consider the plight of the dinosaurs, which we can get into when we talk about the themes. But I don't know, it just felt really clumsy. And everyone seemed to behave in sort of the most nonsensical, illogical ways for like 90% of the decisions that people make.
Yeah, I get that.
You know, and I get everything that everyone does in the original film and even in the second one. And this one is just kind of like, what is happening right now? So, yeah, I just didn't love it. I will say, I loved Ted Levine in this film. I thought that he was sort of this shining star, but that's just because I really like Ted Levine in general, I suppose. But yeah, overall, it didn't do it for me. I will say, though, I thought the opening sequence was pretty great. I thought that was one of the only really tense moments where they're trying to get this bone out of the ocean.
It was tense, but it was very like, I don't know. I feel like you knew what was going to happen, and then that sort of scene has gotten repeated in every Jurassic Park movie before, and I'm sure if they make another one, like that same sequence of events will get repeated again, and it gets repeated like in the same movie too, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I guess I have more to say about that scene, but I should save that for spoilers. But but yeah, I mean, I don't regret seeing this. If you're gonna see it, you should see it in a theater on the biggest screen possible. But it just, I don't know. It feels like they didn't really know what to do with this film. The one thing I will give it credit for is that it does actually introduce new ideas into this franchise. And I don't think it explored them fully, but I think that I give them credit for getting pretty bonkers in terms of where they bring this technology that's used in the film. And we can talk about that a little bit more in spoilers. But even if it didn't work for me, I can at least appreciate that they're trying to do something new.
One of my qualms with it was that I felt like it was just the same movie as the other Jurassic World movie. Like, I was like, I felt like I was in the Star Wars franchise where it's like every movie has kind of like the same themes going into it. And I felt that was what this movie was like as well. Like, it was the same themes. Well, okay. There's a main different theme, and that's what we're going to spend most of the time explaining to. But plot wise, I felt like it had a very similar plot as the other one.
In what way? Like, things go wrong and dinosaurs are on the loose, or something more specific?
Something more specific.
You want to save that for spoilers?
I do want to save that for spoilers.
Okay, yeah. All right. So, yeah, let's. I feel like we've talked about it enough. You know, I thought all the actors, everyone was fine in it. I actually really love Toby Jones, who's kind of this almost Donald Trump-esque character in the film. He was playing like a way different. Normally, he's this kind of like timid, bookish kind of guy, and this one, he's this like super brash, confident businessman, which I thought was like a nice turn for him. And Chris Pratt, who is very much not vegan, he is sort of effortlessly charismatic. And I think, you know, like, the film, his character works only because him as an actor, like he just works as an actor. But yeah, Overall, he's kind of a really bland character, as is Bryce Dallas Howard, who plays Claire, who is all of a sudden now like a dinosaur rights activist. But that doesn't, I don't really see the leap between where she was in Jurassic World to being a dinosaur rights activist. But
yeah,
again, that falls under the category of she is this thing because that's what the plot demands, but not because it feels like it's any logical extension of what she went through in the first one.
Yeah, I feel like Chris Pratt is just like being Chris Pratt. Like, he's kind of like a character of himself at this point.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, I don't think we've ever really seen Chris Pratt stretch out and be someone that's not Chris Pratt.
Yeah.
It's kind of, I don't know, I feel like, who else is kind of like that? Like, Tom Cruise, for the most part, is always just Tom Cruise. Brad Pitt, maybe Brad Pitt to a lesser extent, but, you know, sometimes he's Benjamin Button, but often he's, or like George Clooney or someone like that, that's just like, they never really step outside of being this charismatic guy, and it works because he's just so damn charismatic, but you kind of want him to do something else.
Yeah, yeah.
So, all right. So let's leave it there. If you feel compelled to see this film, see it, but I think go in with the expectations that Paul had and like lower them significantly even more than that, and you'll probably have a lot of fun with it. It's not like there isn't fun to be had, but overall, I felt like it was a really disappointing entry. This is like a franchise that started out so amazing, and now it's just taught me not to really be excited about it anymore, and just to be like, okay, I'll go see this because I have nothing to do on a Tuesday afternoon, and I'll go fill 2 hours. But it's now just sort of like a B movie thing about watching dinosaurs eat people versus any real meaningful exploration about like the nature of existence and all of these things that the original was.
Just another thing to be jaded about.
Delightfully jaded. Okay. So from here on out, there will be spoilers about Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom.
Hey, come on. I haven't seen it yet. It doesn't have anything to do with the plot. Still, I like to go in fresh.
In regards to that opening scene.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that happens 3 years after the events of the original.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like they were in some extreme rush. So why did they choose to conduct this mission at night during a horrible storm?
Because Andy, they had to convey the point that those people were not supposed to be there and were bad guys because they were doing it at night.
Gotcha. I did love that shot of the guy that's doing the communication, whatever, on the land, and there's a lightning flash and you see the T-Rex coming up behind him.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty great.
It was. That was a good shot. Yeah.
But also, you'd think that that guy, if he's somewhere that he's not supposed to be on an island with dinosaurs, if he sees the rest of his team, like, frantically waving their arms, he wouldn't be like, no, I can't hear you. He's just like, no, you don't get it. My headphone's not working. And they're all, like, waving and yelling at him to come.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little silly.
But do you know what I mean? Like, that scene, I feel like, happens all the time where it's like someone's standing somewhere and then they do like the slow turn behind them and there's just a dinosaur standing behind them.
Yeah, but it's such a good slow turn, Paul.
I guess, but it happens, like, it definitely happens more in this movie, but in all the other movies as well.
Yeah.
All right, can I spoil what I was trying to, what I was kind of getting at before?
Go for it.
So I feel like this movie, I was saying before, this movie just feels like the same as Jurassic World, the first one, because it's just like in both movies, they're like, all right, the T-Rex was the big deal for every other movie. So how can we top the T-Rex? And in the other movie, it's the Indominus Rex or whatever it's called, whatever they're called. And then like that happened. And then in this movie, they were like, okay, so we've played that card. So, like, what else do we have? Oh, let's just create an even more deadly dinosaur that we're just going to make up. But it's not, like, it didn't feel like it was any more intense than the last movie. Like, that was the point of the last movie, was, like, this animal is even more terrifying than a T-Rex. And then it gets killed. And then they get killed by a T-Rex at the end of that movie. And then this one, it's like, oh, and this one's even more terrifying. And then they get taken out by a single raptor. And it's like, I don't know. Like, they're trying to make this thing where it's like, this is so scary and horrifying. And I will say, Andy, the bedroom scene where you could just see the claws, the shadow, and the dinosaur, like, pulls away the covers with these, like, long pointed claws. I thought that was, like, genuinely terrifying. But overall, I just felt like they were just doing the same thing. And, like, is that what they're going to do the next time? They're going to be like, okay, how can we, like, instead of developing a different idea about how something could be more terrifying, how, like, the situation could be terrifying, or something else to do with the plot, instead of making that interesting, their solution for both of these movies was like, no, we just need to make a scarier dinosaur. And I feel like for me, that kind of flopped for both movies.
Yeah, it's such a bizarre solution to this challenge that they have, where they have to up the stakes. But yeah, they never really demonstrate why this new Endoraptor is more terrifying than any of the other dinosaurs, or at least the other raptors, really. Like, I guess they're a little bit smarter and a little bigger than a normal raptor, but they never really show why we should be more scared of this creature than a raptor or a T-Rex, in my opinion. And also, how many times is this franchise going to use the T-Rex swoops in and saves the day thing? Because they did that in the original Jurassic Park. They did it in Jurassic World. I feel like they did it, like, once or twice in this one. Yeah. They may have done it in the lot. Like, it's just, why is this T-Rex that we're supposed to be so terrified of, this benevolent deus ex machina, like, creation, you know? Like,
yeah.
It just makes no sense whatsoever. And I do agree with you that on that level, it is very similar to Jurassic World. But this one brings in this idea of cloning humans and that sort of technology, and it adds that extra layer to the thing. And, you know, with the whole ending of this cloned daughter deciding to set the dinosaurs free because she realizes that they're like her. And, you know, no spoilers for Westworld, but it's kind of like a theme that Westworld, I would say, is exploring now. But, you know, it's robots or cyborgs or whatever you want to call them instead of dinosaurs. But kind of this, like, if we create these creatures, what are we ethically allowed to do to them and to put them through and all of these things? And so it's almost trying to explore that. And maybe we'll get more of that in the third one. But it felt like that theme was really underexplored. So, I don't know. And also, like, it's obvious something is up with this daughter if they won't reveal, you know, this photo in the book and the you know, it's clear something is up with this daughter. So I didn't figure out exactly what it was, but when it was revealed, it wasn't like this huge, like, oh, crap moment. It was just like, oh, okay, we're doing that now. This is the movie that we're in, and yeah. Now we're getting real bonkers.
The movie does do a lot of, I feel like, shoddily done foreshadowing, where it's yeah. like, hey, by the way, the Indoraptor has this thing with a laser pointer. It's like, no need for us to point that out now, but just remember that for later. And then it's like they make these things specifically so that something can happen with them later. Or like you were pointing out, where it's like James Cromwell's character keeps like hiding this photograph. It's like, all right, we get it. Something's going to happen with this photograph later.
I thought that was the weirdest use of that laser gun, though. Didn't it seem obvious that that would get pointed at like the Toby Jones character and used to, you know, instead of,
yeah.
Oh, like somehow Chris Pratt knows, like they've somehow communicated, point this at me and I'm going to run at the Raptor and then dive at last second. And it just seems like the most illogical thing to do.
Yeah. All right. Andy, we should probably, we're almost 40 minutes into the app. We should probably talk about animal stuff.
Well, we're talking about animals, Paul.
So,
okay.
I'm going to say this.
Yes.
I thought that this movie had 0% animal rights issues related to it.
Well, according to PETA, you're wrong. And actually, according to Colin Trevorrow, who directed the original and co-wrote this and produced this one, you are wrong, Paul. So,
oh, no.
We'll put a link to this in the show notes, but in a little interview essay kind of thing over at thespectrum.com titled "In Jurassic World, a Dino-Sized Animal Rights Parable." And there's this quote from Trevorrow, which says, "We have a relationship with animals on this planet that is tenuous and is strained. They suffer from abuse and trafficking and the consequences of our environmental choices," said Trevorrow. "To find a way to build essentially a children's franchise about how we have a responsibility to the creatures that we share the planet with felt like a worthwhile thing to do." So that's the co-writer's opinion of this thing. And then I found another article that had a quote from him where he just said that the film will be a parable of the treatment animals receive today. So, I mean, I thought, you know, it's dealing with animals in captivity and the questions of whether we should attempt to bring back extinct species. I feel like there's ripe ground for animal rights themes. So make your case why you felt like there was no animal rights themes.
Okay. I was over exaggerating. There was not no animal rights themes, but I think it's like, it was the lowest hanging fruit animal rights theme that a movie can have, which is, look at this sad lion that this hunter just killed. Look how terrible that was. Or even like further than that, like look at these people that are capturing these animals when they shouldn't be, like something like that. It's like, that is to me the extent of the animal rights theme in this movie.
Yeah.
And to emphasize that, Andy, on my flight to Colorado in the airport, there was a big poster that had Bryce Dallas Howard on it. And on one side of her was a dinosaur. And on the other side of her was like a white rhino or some endangered animal. Mm-hmm. And it was like, you know, like don't let these animals go extinct or something. It was something like that. But again, it's just like, it's the lowest hanging fruit of animal rights issues that the majority of people are going to be like, yeah, you're right. I don't think that this animal should go extinct, but then they don't really care about any other animal issue. And really, Andy, I'll let you talk in a minute. I see you trying to get a word in there, but at the end of the movie, when Bryce Dallas Howard's character was like, maybe I should fess up to this mess that I've made, and maybe I should just let these animals die because I brought them here and I should not have brought them into existence. Really, I brought them into existence and I shouldn't have. And the only reason why the little clone girl chooses to save them is her reasoning, and the reasoning that we're all supposed to take away from it is like, she's like, they're like me. So is the moral of the story like, we should only help animals if those animals have some human characteristic, or if they can be related to a human in some way?
Ooh, that is a great point, Paul.
Thank
that is
you.
A great point.
GPP.
But I think that a lot of advocates would say that there are many ways that most animals are like humans in some way. And that's why you see things that are like, the pig is smarter than your dog and smarter than a three-year-old, and chickens form complex social bonds, and all of those kind of language points that are used in educational materials and videos and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I think it would honestly be hard to find an animal, even like a slug or something like that, that you wouldn't be able to find something to say they're like us in some regard.
Yeah.
And, obviously the animal rights talking point is it doesn't matter, you know, like what matters is their ability to suffer. And in that, a pig is a dog is a boy is like, you know, that whole common rhetoric.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess it's saying that. And maybe it's saying you need more of a connection than just the ability to feel pain or something like that. But I don't know if that's a negative thing, I guess, other than the fact that they show the character who's not incredibly like the dinosaurs because of her origin deciding that they should die.
Yeah. Yeah. To me, it was like they were going to die. And then the reason they don't die is because they're so like this little girl. And I don't know. I feel like that's maybe not overall, based that point or that scene and every other scene, I feel like it's definitely, to me, sending the message to people like, I don't know. They don't explicitly say this, but like certain animals are worth protecting. And again, it's these like it's the lions, it's these endangered, it's like the gorillas and the orangutans. It's AKA it's every animal that we don't eat, basically.
Yeah. 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 No, I think that's definitely a good point. I will say about that moment when the young girl sets the dinosaurs free, it felt like a really cheap moment. You know, like the whole film is sort of about Claire's journey to deciding like what should happen with these animals. And then she decides, and then the kid swoops in and is like, nope, actually your decision is wrong. And just sort of, I feel like robs what could have been a very interesting moment of its like potential and its meaning.
I agree, because I think that they could have made, obviously I don't believe that this was ever intended to be an animal rights movie, so it's like I don't know why they would have done this, but I think it could have been sent a very strong animal message if she had chosen to let the animals die and they did die and it like showed them dying. Because Andy, I think one of the most powerful scenes in the movie was after the volcano erupts and there's just the Brontosaurus, that you just see the shadow of the Brontosaurus and they kind of like rear up on their rear legs, like the fame. I think there's the famous shot like that in the first movie of the Brontosaurus, but it's like this time they're like dying. Like,
yeah.
this is like the final moment of that Brontosaurus's life. And I think that moment was very powerful, and they could have replicated a similar moment with the animals dying at the end. And I think that would have been more powerful to be like, wow, animal suffering is really messed up and I should probably think about animal suffering a little bit more. Now, again, I don't think most people would make, maybe I don't think most people would make the connection over to the animals that they eat, but I do think overall that would have been sent a more powerful animal message.
But Paul, if that happened, then they wouldn't have the literal Jurassic World for the third film. Which was such a corny ending. Oh my god. Like, I'm honestly more excited for the potential of the third one than this one. But I don't know. I also, not to victim blame, but I don't understand why that Brontosaurus didn't get in the water. Like, isn't that why they have those long necks?
Not to victim blame.
Maybe the lava would have gone in the water, but I don't know. It just felt like there was more that dinosaur could have done to survive.
I was going to say this about the end of the movie. Andy, did you stay for the post-credit scene?
Paul, I could not have given less of a shit about this film, so I did not. Normally, during the credits, I will sit there and Google, is there a post-credit scene? And I just left. I just was so done with this movie. But I've heard that there is a nice post-credit scene.
No, you've heard wrong then, Andy, because because you wait for the, like, 10 minutes of credits, And you know how at the end of the movie, the real movie, it's like, or the reg, I don't know, the end of the movie before pre-credits, it's just showing all the dinosaurs in the world now. Like, it shows the T-Rex with the lion, which I thought was a cool scene. And then it shows like, and then it shows
having a roar off for some reason.
And then it shows like, you know, other animals, like it shows Blue like running around the desert or blah, blah, blah. And it's just like different shots of different dinosaurs in different places. And then you have 10 minutes of credits. And then you have a legitimately 10-second post-credit scene that just shows pterodactyls landing on like on some building. And then that's it. And I was like, why is this not just a part of the, like, why did they need to do this post-credit? Why was not this a part? It just seemed like it went along with all that other stuff. But they were like, no, we need to put something at the end, but we don't have time to actually film something. So let's just cut out one of those little shots and then put it at the end. But it was literally like 10 seconds and you wait 10 minutes to see it. I was so upset about that.
Bummer.
Sorry, I just went off on a big old tangent.
That's fine. It only made me entirely lose my train of thought.
But I don't know. I just think like I'm sticking to this, that I feel like there was basically no animal themes besides the lowest of the animal themes that they knew basically everyone would agree with anyways.
Well, you know, it's funny because I read a few negative reviews that said this was like a very like ham-fisted, that's probably not a vegan term, but a very, you know, like a very clunky social justice message. So some people didn't agree with it, obviously, but I don't know. You say it's lowest common denominator. I do agree on some level in that it's basically anti-poaching.
That's what I was looking for.
I don't think it's an anti-extinction thing necessarily, but it does ask the question of if we have the ability to bring an animal back from extinction, should we? And then what sort of ethical responsibility do we have to that animal if we do? Because the film kind of posits, and I guess a lot of these films do, that if we bring them back, it's okay for us to put them in captivity and make money off of them versus bringing them back for their own reasons. Mm-hmm. And that ties into the motivations of the James Cromwell character, which we can talk about in a little bit, because that's one of the bullet points from this PETA article that I want to dig into in a minute. But I do think that it is an anti-captivity film, which I don't think is lowest common denominator, given how popular zoos are and how popular aquariums are. So I think it is kind of against that. But maybe, I don't know, do you think someone would watch it and say, well, this is just an irresponsible way to do captivity and they could have done this better or something like that?
You know, that's a good question. I don't actually know if... I'm curious as to if someone would watch this that is either pro-zoo or has little opinions about that. I'm curious if they would watch this and be like, huh, maybe that is not a good thing to do. But, you know, it's not like this is the first of those types of movies. Like, when did Free Willy come out? You know, that's like, we have these movies, these types of movies before, and it's not like that movie came out ages before the whole, like, downfall of SeaWorld.
Yeah.
So I think that, this is just my opinion and my speculation, but I think that the dinosaurs are they're too far removed from real life animals that most people wouldn't be like, oh, this is a movie that's actually supposed to be about like animals in zoos. And
what about that comparison between the T-Rex and the lion?
But wasn't that lion like in a zoo anyways?
Yeah, exactly. So the language of the film visually, it's saying, is there a meaningful difference between this lion and this T-Rex? They're both the king of the jungle.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. But
the prehistoric jungle.
What was my two? I don't remember what my two was. Two. Oh, yeah. Two. Isn't I guess the original Jurassic Park, the one of the points is like you can't contain these dinosaurs, even though they tried to contain them.
Uh-huh.
But and I haven't seen it in a while, Andy, maybe being this as one of your favorite movies, maybe you can tell me this, but do they get the point across? Like, not only can they not contain these, but it was unethical to do it in the first place. Because if not, then it's like they basically just made a zoo for dinosaurs.
Yes. I mean, the whole thing that Malcolm says about how nature finds a way is definitely a prevailing theme. And actually, I can't believe I didn't say this earlier because I was wanting to say this. My thoughts on this entire film can definitely go back to something that Jeff Goldblum's Malcolm character says in the first one, which is, and speaks to the theme that you're bringing up right now, which is, your scientists were so preoccupied with whether they could, they didn't stop to think if they should. And that's how I feel about this film being made. But yeah, it does say that, like, it's essentially saying, just because we can bring these animals back, it doesn't mean that we should, or that it's a good idea.
And but then doesn't that mean that at the end of the movie, Bryce Dallas Howard should have let the animals die? Is that implying that then?
Perhaps, but then I guess, yeah, I mean, I think that that's the conclusion that she reaches, is yeah, that we shouldn't have been meddling with these creatures. There's a reason that, you know, they didn't go extinct because man was poaching the last, you know, white rhino or whatever it might be. They went extinct because of this natural event. So it's not like, I think there'd be an ethical difference between bringing back the dodo or a certain rhino or something like that that was caused by man versus an animal that has gone extinct due to some giant natural event like an asteroid or whatever it might have been. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, the film asks those questions, but there is, I think, meaningful differences between them. But I think that, you know, the film is ultimately concluding that animals deserve to be free, even if that means that they're just going to go and wreak havoc on the human populations.
Yeah. But, well, here's the other thing, is that it's like, yes, I agree with that. That's the conclusion that that little girl came to. But for the most part, there was only like one of each of those animals, right? So aren't they just going to die out very quickly anyways, besides the fact that at the end scene also shows, like, now in, I don't know, like Russia or something, it shows people with all the vials. So it's, I feel like it's concluding that different people around the world are going to start creating dinosaurs, which I feel like defeats the purpose of what some of, like, what it kind of defeats the purpose of why the little girl chose to let them go. It's like, yes, they deserve to be free, but I don't think she was condoning, like, we should continue to create these for our own use.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I guess it also is kind of asking, it's something that I think that we deal with as vegans, where we're kind of asking ourselves, how much should we sacrifice in order to grant animals their autonomy? And, you know, even something as simple as, should we let ants overrun our house if they decide to infest our house because we don't want to hurt animals, you know? And yeah, it's this is obviously asking that on a much grander scale. That's, do these animals that we've created deserve their bodily autonomy to the point where they're going to be able to just run free and eat a bunch of people in some Nevada neighborhood in the desert?
Some ambiguous mansion location.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because in that interview with Trevorrow, he was talking about how he co-wrote and produced, but this one was directed by that other director, whatever, J.A. Bayona. And Bayona's vision was for the second half of the film to basically be like a haunted house type film. And so I guess I get that it's the terror of, like, raptors being in a small enclosed space versus this giant park, which is kind of terrifying, but I don't know.
You kind of got that with the Indoraptor, though. That's kind of what that was like.
Yeah, I mean, everything with the Indoraptor just felt like a lesser version of the scene in the kitchen with the raptors at the end of the original Jurassic Park.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And there was even some shots that sort of recalled some of the iconic shots of that one, like the raptor opening the door, right? And then there's a moment where the raptor's kind of running at the girl going in the dumbwaiter thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But Andy, that bedroom scene was genuinely scary.
Never mind that it doesn't really make sense that the raptor would like slowly reach their claw out at this little girl.
Yeah.
But yeah, genuinely scary. Okay, Paul. So we have this article from PETA, which is titled Four Themes PETA Hopes You Catch in Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
And so PETA, of course, and, you know, we've talked so much about how vegans are desperate to find vegan themes in anything. And let's decide if we think this is a case of that or not. So let's just go through these four themes. The first one they list is that no live animals were used. So that obviously no live dinosaurs were used, but that includes any other real animals, of which I'm trying to remember, I guess the lion and maybe a few others.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's like a theme so much as just sort of some background information that someone could learn, but that's like, pretty that's cool.
It's cool, but I feel like that accolade applies better to the, what was it? The newest Planet of the Apes movies. Cause wasn't that all digital as well? I feel like that applies.
I think they used real horses.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Well, but my point remains, like, if they had done that, I feel like that applies there because you're like, wow, this is a movie that has a lot of live animals or has a lot of animals in it, but they didn't choose to, they chose not to use live animals. Whereas this is like this, like you were saying, there's the lion, but there's really, I can't think of any other animals that they would have used anyways, unless they put like dogs in raptor costumes and had them running around. But like, that's, you know what I mean? It's like, I feel like, I'm trying to think of another movie that like obviously does not have any animals in it. And then they're like, yeah, no live animals were used in that movie. Like, awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Fair enough. Yeah. I think it's not super noticeable. Did you see that final Planet of the Apes film? War for Planet of the Apes?
I haven't seen any of them.
You haven't?
No.
Paul, they are, they get increasingly better with each film. I think War for the Planet of the Apes is truly a phenomenal film.
Is that the most recent one?
Yeah. I honestly might be worth a review. Maybe we'll do that one day for one of these bonus episodes.
Anyways.
Paul is slightly nodding his head for the listener at home. Okay. So there's that theme. Yeah, I agree that it's not a theme. I don't think it's a theme. I just think it's a piece of trivia. And I think that it's cool. But yeah, it's not like it was a film about lions. And they used all CG lions, so that would send more of a message.
Oh, like that, like the, what was the movie about the ringling guy?
Greatest Showman.
Didn't that use all, I mean, obviously, we're not going to go into that right now, but didn't that use all animated animals?
I don't really know.
No.
Scratch it. I have zero desire to see or know anything about that film. All right. So second point is it shows that illegally trafficking exotic animals is what bad guys do. So is this a relatable point for the general public, or are they just kind of hoping that the billionaires out there that can afford to pay several million dollars for an animal are going to see this film and have a change of heart?
I guess that this is a theme, but I think this is another one where it's like, there are other movies. There are plenty of other movies that do this, that it's like, I would almost consider this like a, like not cliche, but what's the word I'm looking for? So like it's like a reoccurring enough.
Yeah. I think that this plays to your idea that it's kind of a lowest common denominator animal rights theme.
Yeah.
The general public is not cheering on the poaching of rhinos or illegally trafficking animals, you know?
And Andy, you had mentioned at the beginning, you were like, oh, I really liked Ted Levine's performance. And his performance aside, his character was so unnecessary in this movie. Like, his character was strictly to be there to be like, hey, just in case you already didn't know that this is a bad, like, you probably already get that this is a bad thing that they're doing, but we're just going to put this guy that's just like an extra jerk in it who plays absolutely no role in the plot at all. Like, if his character was removed and just his henchmen did the same things that he did, there would be no difference in this movie. Like, he comes in and then he just dies later on. And there's no, like, he doesn't move the plot forward. He doesn't do anything with the plot. I thought his character was completely unnecessary.
you said Ted Levine. Did you mean Toby Jones, like the other rich guy that was involved in the auction?
No, I meant Ted Levine, Andy.
Paul, he was there for tooth time. He's taking those teeth.
But like that didn't mean anything to anyone. It did not pay off.
He's
it did, like,
the
nothing
reason
happened.
Why the Endoraptor gets released.
But that could have happened in literally any other way. They didn't need like a new character just to do that.
Yeah, that's true. But I clearly the director is like, you know what? I could use some Ted Levine in this film, and I am so happy Ted Levine is in this film because I think he brightens up any film he's a part of.
Like, again, he was a good actor, but his character was just so one dimensional. And it's just like, here's a guy that's just a bad guy. Like, at least some of the other bad guys had moments of trying to justify what they were doing. Whereas this guy was just like, I am just a bad guy. I have no redeeming qualities. Like I was saying it just goes along with like, this is the guy that is the trafficker. That's the poacher. And it's like, oh, of course he's going to be the one-dimensional bad guy character. He's like a stereotypical character in a movie.
Well, Toby Jones is 100%, I think, the most mustache-twirlingly evil businessman.
He is, but I feel like he's not as... He's like one and a half dimensions. Ted Levine is just one dimension.
All he is this guy that's coming in with like a bunch of money. I thought he was... the most cartoonishly evil. Right. Like Ted Levine's character, the sort of the head poacher guy who's stealing teeth for a necklace. I thought he was stealing them for the DNA or something like that. But nope, turns out just for a nice necklace. Just going to get in this cage with this hopefully knocked out abominable creation that's designed to kill everything. Just get a tooth. Just get a quick tooth out of this dinosaur here. He is the one that is just... Him and Toby Jones, I think, are both telegraphed to be like, well, clearly both of these people are going to be dead by the end of this film.
Yeah.
Whenever you have the, like, alpha male military guy coming in and, like, bossing people around and all that, you're like, obviously this person dies a horrible death at the end of this film, and this was no exception. I did think that Ted Levine death was pretty gnarly, with, like, the arm ripped off.
Yeah, it was more graphic than most of the rest of the movie.
yeah. It's on par with the lawyer getting bit in half on the toilet in the original Jurassic Park. Okay. So this next point from this PETA article is something that I alluded to earlier, which is the voice of reason for the animals was real-life superhero James Cromwell, who is vegan and has done all sorts of PETA stuff and... was in Babe and all that good stuff. So he is the totally retconned other John Hammond character. There was a second rich guy in this. You know, it's like, what? They literally never mentioned this guy. He just doesn't want to be known, apparently. But anyway, he is the sort of the benevolent rich guy. And to quote from this little listicle here, his character has an island that's ready for them being the dinosaurs. It's described as having no fences, no cages, and no tourists. So that's Cromwell's vision for these dinosaurs, just sort of this dinotopia. And at one point, the character says, these creatures don't need our protection, they need our absence. So I think that right there, Paul, is a huge animal rights theme, which is basically animals just need to be left the hell alone.
Yeah. I don't know if, like... Do you think that James Cromwell was specifically cast for this because he's vegan? Because I think that that's just a coincidence.
Yeah, I think it's probably just a nice coincidence more than anything, but it is nice. I mean, I don't know if Trevorrow is so conscious about trying to make this some sort of animal rights parable, perhaps it was sort of poetic or that they made more of an effort to cast James Cromwell.
Maybe.
And Cromwell was like, hell yeah, give me that Jurassic World money.
Yeah. But I will say, in terms of talking about the animal rights themes of this movie, it does play into, like, we've created this mess. Now what do we do with this mess? And the bad guys are saying, we profit off this mess. And then, like, the James Cromwell character is saying, like, we've made this mess. Let's just take the dinosaurs, put them on this island where they can live out and without any more interaction. It's like, we've made this mess, but this is like the best in his eyes. And I would think I would agree with him. In his eyes, it's like, this is the best way to handle this, where it's like, we have to interact with them to get them off this island because we've brought them there. But once we've taken them to this other place, we can kind of like leave them alone and let nature play out its course, whichever way that's going to go.
Yeah.
But I feel like, you know, his character dies relatively early on, maybe like mid movie. But even by then, it's like he doesn't have that much screen time, where I don't feel like that idea that he has, it's like, yes, that's what Bryce Dallas Howard and Chris Pratt, that's what they think they're going to do, but it's pretty quickly realized that that's not what's going on. So it's almost like that idea that he puts forward pretty early in the movie gets, I think, very much overshadowed by the anti-poaching theme that comes on. So it's almost like it's not a movie. It becomes like could have been a movie that was like, how do we handle this mess with these beautiful beings that we've created and that we've made? It gets overshadowed by like, poaching is bad, you know?
Do you think that whenever James Cromwell character watches footage of the dinosaurs, he asks his assistant to roll that beautiful being footage?
That beautiful being.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't have a lot of screen time, as you said. And also, I think the fact that they introduced that he has created this, I guess cloned would be the term we'd use, version of his daughter, I think a lot of people would view that as irresponsible and on some level evil, even though he's supposed to be this really benevolent presence in the film.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that almost undermines a little bit of that message as well, because he's not a character that is wholly good. And obviously, that makes for an interesting and compelling character, one that has flaws and is multifaceted and maybe has made some mistakes, even though they're like understandable. But I agree that this point, I honestly didn't even remember these quotes until this PETA article came up. But maybe that's because I was just, the further along this movie went, the more I felt checked out of it. And the final quote is, the final point is, and these are the words they choose, it flirts with anti-captivity like the two are Chetty Tinder matches.
Wait, what two? What are the two that they're referring to?
Good question.
It flirts with anti-captivity like the two are Chetty Tinder matches. Oh, the movie,
the
and,
movie
anti-captivity.
And anti-captivity.
Oh, yes. The abstract movie and the abstract idea, anti-captivity.
Yeah. So I feel like we've kind of already covered that. I feel like the film sort of is, but not really. It's not anti-captivity for animals that we eat, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Andy.
Yes, Paul.
Can I bring up a point that I think, because the James Cromwell character, I don't think got enough airtime to fully develop and put forward the ideas that he was trying to put forward. But another character that I think didn't get a lot of airtime, because I think that this character might also be interesting to discuss about how his impact on animals and the animal themes of the movie, the non-aging Dr. Henry Wu.
BD Wong, back again. That was a nice surprise. Very nice surprise.
Back from going all the way back to the original Jurassic Park movie, somehow looks like 30 years old in this movie.
Maybe he's a clone. Maybe. an evil clone.
But Andy, I think his character is interesting because, see, this is like the multidimensional character traits that I want in some of the bad guys that were in this movie. But it's like his character is like, I feel like represents like we're doing these scientific things for science sake and maybe not taking into consideration all of the ethics that go along with that, but then also not going along with what the bad guys are trying to do. Like, he doesn't want to sell he wants to develop the Indoraptor, but he doesn't want to sell it because it's not like completely, it's not a finished project yet, you know, type of thing. So I feel like he kind of represents not exactly the middle, but also not like a full bad guy, I don't think.
Yeah. I feel like they paint him as pretty evil, but a little reluctant at the end. But yeah, I agree. He is more nuanced.
And I don't know. I think I wish that they had explored that a little bit more. You know, it's I think it just would have added another perspective where it's like, this is the person that is just so invested in science that doesn't think about like the moral dilemmas that are going on. Like, I feel like if they had explored that theme, that would have been cool.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. I felt like there was several themes that went very unexplored, and I don't necessarily have hopes that they're going to get explored in the next one, but I agree with you entirely.
Like you said at the beginning though, Andy, I'm excited for like this movie, even though I had fun watching this movie, like we've pointed out, not the best movie, but I'm excited about the potential for the third one where it's just dinosaurs just roaming around interacting with the general population.
Yeah.
I think that might be good.
I'm excited for the scenes where benevolent like brontosauri are walking through Las Vegas or something like that, and it's not just a bloodbath. It's just sort of this weird thing that's happening. I think that'll be fun. All right, Paul. So I feel like we've really explored this film a lot. I'm sure we've left tons out, so, you know, send your emails in. But I think the thing that this film asks of us, and I guess all of the films, especially the first one, but what do you think about the ethics of Jurassic Park? You know, as we said, there's sort of two different distinctions here. Like, what about bringing back a species that was extinct well before mankind was around? And what do you think about the ethics of, say, bringing back the dodo or some other animal that went extinct because of humans?
I definitely feel more comfortable with bringing back, like, the dodo or one of the, like, the types of rhinos that are extinct or something like that, an animal like that. I think with, in terms of, like, Jurassic Park, it's like they brought back these animals to basically put them in like the equivalent of a zoo, a dinosaur zoo.
Yeah.
And I, knowing Andy, I know quite a few humans in real life, and knowing how humans are, I feel like if we did have a way to bring back dinosaurs, someone would try and find a way to exploit that fact and exploit them. So for that reason, I feel like I'm going to say, no, we probably shouldn't do that. And if it was truly like they brought them back and then put them on this island, like James Cromwell's character says, with like no tourists, no fences, no cages, I would say maybe I wouldn't feel as bad about that. But then almost at that point, it's almost like, well, then what was the point of bringing them back? You know?
Yeah. Is the world a better place because there's an island where some dinosaurs are there roaming free? Like, what does it add or subtract to the world? Or I don't know. I guess maybe that's me putting too much value on like the worth of an animal. Like, I guess just an animal existing has their own value. But it's kind of, yeah, I agree with you. Like, what would really be the point of that? Because you're sort of adding these creatures into an ecosystem that did not need them. Like, maybe the dodo was necessary to a certain ecosystem, and them not being around anymore has a severe impact on it. I don't know the finer points of the dodo situation there, right? But it seems like it's just not, to me, not an ethically sound thing to do, to bring back a dinosaur.
And even, you know, even bringing back one of the animals that we've caused to go extinct, I feel like we just mess things up a lot, Andy. And
yeah,
I worry that doing something like that, it's like, wow, we are like, humanity as a whole has such a negative effect on, and obviously I'm just talking about, you know, like wild animals right now. I'm not talking about like cows, chickens, pigs, all those, which are equally as important, if not more important to care about and to do something about. But it's like, our effect on humanity is so negative to those animals that like, I just can't, like, instead of being like, we've caused this species to go extinct, let's find a way to bring them back. I feel like our effort should be going into like, let's find a way to make sure that this doesn't happen. This doesn't continue to happen, because it's like, yeah. I don't know. It just doesn't seem to me, it's not a solution to be like, our effect our impact on these animals is that they keep going extinct, the solution shouldn't be like, well, we figured out a way to bring them back, but then like the impact is continuing to be negative. So it's almost like a cycle.
Yeah.
Now, if like both of those things happened at the same time, then I guess that's better. But I don't know. I just foresee humans mucking that up pretty bad.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess, you know, my position is generally that non-existence is preferable to existence.
As we've
depressingly explored in a lot of like our human population episodes and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But not that I think that we should be destroying humanity or anything like that, but just my personal views on whether or not I want to procreate or not. But I guess unless it's a situation where an animal getting removed from an ecosystem drastically affects it and like affects then the survival of the other animals that are around, to me it feels like if the animal is extinct, we should just leave them extinct
and learn from it, make sure it doesn't happen to other species, but just we can't correct the terrible stuff that we've already done.
Yeah. Well, all right, do you have any other thoughts, Paul?
I still thought the movie was kind of fun.
It wasn't the worst thing I've ever seen. It just, so many poor decisions and things that don't make sense. Like Blue is for some reason this incredibly important raptor, but then they just leave her in the care of one person and the person's told they have to fix that dino or else she'll be shot.
Yeah.
You know, like it just feels like a really poor plan to sustain this dinosaur that's incredibly important. That's like the most important part of your mission. Like, wouldn't you try and have some sort of medical facility? Wouldn't you try and have some sort of people assisting her?
Yeah.
It just makes no sense at all. And then they have these giant carnivorous wild creatures and they're just like in these cages they're kind of chained down a little bit, I guess, but like their mouth is totally free and able to, it just made no sense.
Like it was almost as if they really needed to put forward the idea that these were like the bad guys, this huge operation that was capturing all these animals. They were the bad guys. So it's like they're not allowed to have like people in that mission aren't allowed to have jobs that are commonly seen as like good things that people do, like a medic or something like that. So it's like they needed to bring in an outside character in order to have like a medic position. But you're absolutely right. It's like this is a huge operation. There was like, it seemed like there was dozens of people doing this, but they all had to be these snarling bad guys that were like, oh, these are the evil characters. And if you saw someone with like a stethoscope, you'd be like, oh, I can't, my brain can't handle this. He's a bad guy, but he's also saving this dinosaur.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. The film does not trust the general public.
Oh man.
Whew. All right. Well, with that said, let us know what points we left out. Leave a comment in the little Patreon below where we assume you're listening to this, or send us an email, thebeardedvegans@gmail.com. Is there some themes we missed? Are we totally wrong about the themes that we did explore? We always love hearing from y'all about what you think about these episodes and what we missed.
No, we didn't talk about that. The one guy that like the cowardly guy. That if you didn't know that he was nervous about being there, they made sure to make him say things like, oh, we're not going to see a T-Rex, are we? Like 17 times. It's like, God, they...
Surefire way to guarantee that you see a T-Rex, by the way.
I'll say this. I like hated his character at the beginning because I was like, he just keeps repeating this. It's like, yes, we get it. We get what your character is supposed to be. But I loved how his character just wasn't in the entire middle of the movie and then just shows up right at the end. Did like that.
So goofy. Also, the evil assistant to James Cromwell, the one that kills him, he sounded exactly like Ryan Reynolds.
I would have to listen to him again, but that is very funny.
It was the first thing that struck me, and I was like, are you sure Ryan Reynolds didn't overdub this guy's speech? Because he sounds exactly
like... You know, he kind of looks like he would be related to Ryan Reynolds, too, in my mind.
Yeah, he'd be like a second cousin or something like that.
Oh, that's funny.
So, you know, I felt like something that was really missing from this film was a Dennis Nedry-esque character, Paul.
I gotta look up who that is.
Paul.
Oh, that's Newman.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because one of my favorite moments in the original one is when he locks everyone out of his computer. And when like Samuel L. Jackson tries to access it, it pops up that little character of him, him like waving his finger and saying the following seven words over and over again.
We are the Bearded Vegans, signing off. So, Andy,
so Paul, yeah. No, you go ahead. You go ahead.
So Andy, so I have a very related food experience, but before we get to that, I want to hear what your food experiences have been.
I have none that I wanted to talk about.
You have none. All right. So how about you throw it at me?
Okay.
You didn't say the magic word.
All right, Paul. I have no amazing food to talk about other than the fact that I ate a Vegan Treats peanut butter Brahm.
Brahm.
You didn't say the magic word.
All right, Paul. I have no amazing food experiences to talk about at this very moment. Aside from... Oh, you know what? I do. I'm going to do something. I got something. All right. So you throw it to me.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
You didn't say the magic word.
I don't know. I don't want to spoil Westworld. Have you watched Westworld at all?
Nope.
Okay.
You didn't say the magic word.
What's happening? Ghost of a...
Unloading groceries.
Seafaring ghost captain coming in.
It's just showing all these animals, or all the dinosaurs, sorry.
Shut up.
You didn't say the magic word.
We are the Beard Vegan, signing off. We are the Beard Vegan, signing off. Cool.
Oh, that's funny.